Hi folks, Barry here, just before you listen to this week's episode of Worst Foot Forward with our guest Tadiwa Malunga, all about the world's worst wedding ceremony. A few little bits of housekeeping. First things first, thank you to our latest Patreon donor. Hello Jeremy Vitas, welcome on board the Patreon train, choo-choo, destination fun. Jeremy has kindly donated a few quid a month, and we'll be in touch with you about the various rewards and things you can get on there, including picking a topic for the show. If you're not on Patreon, well, what are the things you're missing out on? If you donate at different levels, you get to do things like pick topics for the show, judge episodes, maybe even get a personalised episode just for you, all about you and your name and the year you were born and things like that. Not only that, but Patreon donors of all levels get access to monthly videos. This year, Ben and I are trying to break various very stupid world records. The latest one involved us trying to stack toilet roll into pyramids. And every episode that goes out of the podcast now, we are sticking 5 to 10 minutes worth of bonus content just for Patreon donors on there as well. There's quite a lot actually going to go up in tandem with this episode because, well, as you'll hear, Tad has quite a dark sense of humour. Ben and I enjoyed and lent into, and it made for an hour and a half long recording. There was so much stuff we had to trim out. Some of it very much NSFW, even more NSFW than the podcast normally is. So if you want to see what was too spicy to go in the podcast this week, then head to patreon.com/worstfootforward and sign up. Throw us a few quid. Help keep the lights on. You can also help us keep the lights on in various other ways. Write us a review on your podcatcher of choice on iTunes, or just does anyone else do reviews? I don't know. We mainly get the alerts when iTunes reviews come through. And thank you for the people who do write those. We really appreciate them. And you can also shout about us on social media, on Facebook or on Twitter. We're on @WorstFoot. We have an Instagram @WorstFoot as well. There's all sorts of little clips and things going up on there. Thank you as ever to the Worst Foot archivist, Nell, for handling all of that. And you can get in touch with Ben and I on our own Twitters as well. I'm on @BazMcStay. Ben is on @BenVanderveld. And you can also support our non-podcast based endeavours. Ben runs the Good Ship Comedy Club. You can look up @GoodShipComedy on Twitter if you want to find out more about that. And I've got a short play coming up this coming Sunday the 12th of June. It is part of Miniaturists. Miniaturists is a new writing night at the Arcola Theatre in Dalston in London. Night of, in this case, 6 short plays, each play up to 20 minutes long in total, with work from new writers based in the UK. On this occasion, on Sunday, you can see plays by Nicole Acqua, Tanya Amsel, Olivia Fone, Joel McCormack, Nathan Lucky Wood, and myself. I've got a 20-minute monologue called Like It's Your Last about first dates and death. So if any of you are in London and fancy coming along to that, tickets are only £12, and it's at 5 o'clock and 8 o'clock on Sunday the 12th of June. I'll put a link in the podcast description. So yeah, if you want to catch Ben, go to one of the Good Ship gigs. If you want to catch me, good place to look is next Sunday at the Arcola Theatre in London. That's enough for now. We don't want to make the bride and groom wait any longer. It's time for the episode all about the world's worst wedding.
I'm sorry I'm creating so much work for you to cut. Yeah.
Dearly beloved listeners of Worst Foot Forward, we are gathered here today to celebrate the matrimony of heroism with failure, a union that has been blessed and sanctified for all time. I am Ben Vanderveld, your celebrant for today, and in a time-honoured tradition for all civil ceremonies, I am going to do my best to sound like a concussed supply teacher reading the worst Hallmark card poetry available, pronounce the names of the married couple incorrectly, even though that is literally my only job, and patronise you about the nature of marriage, even though I seem more chaste and barren than an entire synod of septuagenarian priests. Marriage is an institution unlike any other. It is a bet between two partners to see who will crack first, either by dying or filing for divorce, thus surrendering their claim to 50% of their belongings. It is the union of two souls to create one squabbling combined soul. It turns I to we, your to our, and thus we get the matrimonial our soul. So, please join us as we bind our hands together, stamp on glass, and absolutely don't mention how massively creepy it is to make a bride wear white whilst being given away like livestock by her dad. And with me today is the portly page boy to my sugar giddy bridesmaid, the gregarious uncle to the weeping white wine sozzled aunt, the over familiar best man to my dead eyed DJ hitting play on Build Me Up Buttercup for the 8th time this week. It's Barry McStay.
And already it still sounds better than 50 to 70% of the weddings I've been to.
Oh.
Present companies excluded.
Yeah, damn right. Our wedding's absolutely slapped. Go on then. I mean, we're not talking about the worst weddings that we've been to, I assume, on this podcast, but what was a wedding you went to that absolutely stunk?
It's very rarely been the wedding itself or the ceremony or the reception. It's usually the quality of the person you're sat beside at the tables.
Wow. I would say it's usually the quality of the people getting married.
No. You know, I've been to a couple of weddings of friends who have done quite well in their lives and have therefore also got friends who are of a particular social standing and of a particular voting pattern.
Oh, I see. Oh, I've never been knowingly cornered by a Tory at a wedding that I didn't already expect to be cornered by.
Never knowingly cornered by Tories, the Ben Vanderveld promise.
Yeah. The worst weddings I can imagine are... There's two that I'm thinking of. One of a guy who was a promoter who I worked for years and years ago. He was getting married to his second wife during the Edinburgh Festival, but sort of out of town in Scotland, and invited me and three or four other comedians along, who he booked quite a lot. It is a truth long held in stand-up comedy that most promoters are frustrated performers who have had the good sense to get off stage. But he had one last roll of the dice with his groom speech.
Oh no.
And oh boy, did he stink the room out with that.
Oh no. No. The best thing about weddings, though, is to hire... The best idea for weddings, generally, is to appoint Ben as your best man. Because when you get Ben as your best man, as I did, you get his wife as your head usher. Who did most of the organisation for us.
Oh, I see. So I was the make weight in the deal.
Yeah.
And apologies in advance for any listeners under the age of 25 and not from the UK, but I was the Keith Gillespie to her Andy Cole.
Yeah, very much so. And she was worth every penny. Anyway, let me introduce our guest. Our guest this week is Bill as a comedian. Who is Bill as a comedian? Wow, that sounds really bad, doesn't it?
What a backhanded slap. You sound like one of those reply guys saying, he's a comedian, bunny ears.
What happened there is I have copied and pasted lots of bits of your intro around the place, Tad, and some rogue words got left in there. I apologise. Our guest this week is most definitely a comedian who has provided support for the likes of Kiri Pritchard-McLean and Desiree Birch and performed at venues and festivals all over the UK, including the Comedy Store, Clapham Grand, Bristol Old Vic, National Gallery and the Greenwich Maritime Museum. Let's hope his career from here on out is plain sailing, right? He was born in Zimbabwe and grew up in Cardiff, a colonial double whammy, and with ambitions of being a physicist and his eyes firmly set on the likes of Oxford and Cambridge, he was sadly told he would never make the grade. And he took the only viable alternative, a career in stand-up comedy. With a love of writing software, MMA, and the World of Warcraft, he is the self-proclaimed thinking man's incel. Thankfully, he's come to join two very unthinking men on this podcast, so we're oblivious to his potential for mass murder. Described by Aisling B as very funny and neither too tall nor too short, it's the just right Tad Malunga.
Aww. Thank you. That was so lovely. That was so lovely.
Yeah, you're in Aisling B's Goldilocks zone, it turns out.
I love that woman. She's a wonderful woman. She's got a great show. I'm just going to plug her stuff to open up the podcast. What's that shit called? That was really good. I watched it with my ex as our relationship deteriorated.
Oh, wow.
What? The new Home Alone?
No, This Way Up, I think.
This Way Up. It was just funny because and my ex-girlfriend, she's beautiful. Stunning woman. I did it very, very well. But Aisling looked like the perfect version of her. Just like a fucking, like...
Oh,
it was
mate,
so hilarious.
I have the problem that as a 5'6", blue-eyed, curly-haired man, I look like the Wish.com version of Kit Harington. Kit Harington, for a while, was on my wife's top five if they say yes, then I'm allowed to list, which I did not sanction, not least because I went to drama school with Kit Harington, and that would be not the fuck on.
That'd be hilarious.
Barry, in his intro, described you as, it's taken from your website, I believe, as the thinking man's incel, and that's who we've brought on to talk about wedding ceremonies.
Yeah, it does seem like a risk on our part, somewhat.
I hate marriage, but listen, come on. I want to get married. I do. I really, people ask me what my dream is in comedy. My dream, it's to wake up, take my kids to school, come back, write for a few hours, pick them up, chat with my wife for a bit, go out, smash my shows, come home, kids are in bed asleep, chill with my wife, watch TV, no sex because we're 15 years in. You know, just nice, domestic... That's the dream. But come on, man, that's not gonna happen.
Incels would be so much more approachable if they skipped the we deserve to have women for sex bit and just went to we deserve to have women for nice comfort and like bangers and mash and reruns of Taskmaster.
Look, honey, look, season 17. That was me. That was so funny in my 30s. You used to fuck me then.
We're getting pre-nostalgic for nostalgia. I think that's part of what the appeal of weddings is generally. That people see their parents or they see sort of married couples and they think, I want to have that. I want to be at that point in there where they're just like comfortable with one another.
You know, I was thinking in the shower just now. I fucking hate weddings because like it's the only time in society where you see two ugly people kiss and you have to watch. It's fucking disgusting. No, it's fucking
Dad,
disgusting.
Not only that. Not only that, you have to applaud.
Tad, we've discovered that you're very good at bringing the mood at weddings down, it would seem. What are you not so good at? What are you worst at in the world?
This is very difficult to answer because I'm good at almost everything. I'm good at a very limited number of things, but what I've done is I've turned my life into just those things and everything else I've removed. And so there's nothing that ever comes up where I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm being challenged. If I'm challenged, I just remove it from the from my life.
Just already you're like, obstacles, not for me, thank you.
Yeah.
I am not interested in the hero's journey. I just want a nice 100-meter stroll to my goal.
That Tad cannot understand the 110-meter hurdles.
Nope. Yeah. I am bad at English GCSE. That's what I was bad at.
Literature or language or both?
Both. I did quite poorly at both.
English is not your first language, right?
No, it's not.
Okay, two separate thing. Do you speak Welsh?
Ironically, I got the same grade for Welsh and English as GCSE.
What, you got an L?
That's a very good Welsh joke. If people don't know Welsh, you should be applauding that.
Actually, technically, he should have got two L's.
English, I just couldn't do it, man. It's not my shit. I don't like reading. That was my thing. Like, anytime I read... I was listening to Finn Taylor's album on Spotify. By the way, I'm just plugging better comedian shit. And Finn has a joke. He can't read because the reading voice is overcome by a louder voice congratulating himself for reading. And that is my internal dialogue. Is every time I'm reading a book, I'm just like, you're so fucking amazing for reading this book. I read one chapter of Stuart Lee's autobiography. I think I only read it because he signed it for me, and that was it. I just wanted to have had read something that Stuart Lee signed.
I always think of you as being a very erudite kind of guy. And listen, you can be erudite without reading, but when on the occasions that I've met you, I'm like, yeah, Tad's got bookshelves full of, I mean, as an incel, but he's got bookshelves full of slightly creepy self-improvement books.
What you're saying is Tad wears glasses, Ben, let's be honest.
He's a black man who wears glasses, and so he has to be suave and sophisticated. I personally think he should have been the name James Bond. That's what I think.
Yeah.
This week, our show is a Patreon request from our supporters, Naomi and Mark, who are a married couple. And they have requested us to talk about the world's worst wedding ceremony. They've been married for almost 28 years. They actually asked for this topic to be covered almost a year ago, but because me and Barry are so ruthlessly efficient, it's taken us almost a year to get round to it. So I'm going to say happy 28th anniversary, Naomi and Mark, in advance. We hope you enjoy the gift that myself, Barry, and Tad give to you. Barry, what terrible matrimonial ceremonies did you discover?
First things first, I started with the Red Wedding from Game of Thrones, or rather the inspiration for the Red Wedding for Game of Thrones. And there are two particular stories that apparently George R.R. Martin had a little read of and used to inspire that scene. Both from Scotland. One from 1440, The Black Dinner. The Earl of Douglas, who was just 16, and his little brother David were invited to join the 10-year-old King of England, James II. This is three kids of 16 years old and younger having a meal in Edinburgh Castle. But the invitation hadn't been issued by the young king. It had been issued by the Chancellor of Scotland, who was worried that the Douglas family were getting a little bit too powerful. Towards the end of the dinner, the head of a black bull was dropped onto the table to symbolise it was time to strike. And the two young Douglases were dragged out by some guards, given a mock trial and beheaded. I mean, the modern version of that is you take friends to a McDonald's with a ball pit, one of those ones, and then halfway through you take them out back and put a gun to the back of the head. And the other story is the massacre at Glencoe. The McDonald's of Glencoe, quite a powerful family, and their rivals were the Campbells. And the Campbells arrived at the McDonald's stronghold, and they said they needed shelter for a night because the fort nearby was full, and the McDonald's very hospitably opened their doors. The Campbell soldiers stay there for a few weeks. Then they were given the instruction to put all to the sword under 70. So that night, the Campbells and the McDonalds played cards with one another and then said goodnight to each other. And then the Campbells waited until the McDonalds fell asleep and murdered possibly 38 men, and some of them still in their beds, and 40 women and children escaped but fled into a blizzard, which meant a lot of them died of exposure as well. So to this day, the door at Clockegg Inn in Glencoe has a sign on it saying no entry for any Campbells.
I presume that the gift shop and cafe doesn't serve Campbell's soup either.
No, you don't. Yeah, you'd imagine not. Then I read about some cultures around the world where they've got like interesting wedding customs. Uyghur culture in China, grooms shoot at their future brides with bows and arrows.
Whilst they are attached to a revolving multicoloured circle, circus style?
No, apparently they remove the arrowheads, apparently.
Well, that's very sporty.
That's nice of them, you know.
I don't know if it's a similar sort of thing to Cupid's arrow. Obviously, that's a different culture. But they try and hit them three times with these arrows, and then the groom breaks the arrows, and it sort of symbolises that they'll stay in love forever, that she can't be shot by anyone else. She can't be hunted by any other man.
I'm sorry. I hope that modern Uyghurs, they use like the little sort of plunger things on the end, so they end up slapping on the forehead of their brides.
Another Chinese group, the Tujia, the brides are required to cry for an hour a day, every day for the month leading up to their wedding. And 10 days into that, their mother joins in. And then another 10 days in, their grandmother joins in. And it's thought to be a sort of an expression of joy because the women of the different generations, their cries are different sort of tones. And so the theory is it creates a sort of a melody. But in reality, it's just three generations of women sobbing at the thought of one of their weddings.
How are they meant to provoke the sobbing? Speaking as performers, sometimes it can be tricky to get the switch the waterworks on.
I don't know, being locked in a room for an hour with my mother every day for a month might just do it.
Each of them just has to think about the wedding night of the other one.
Yeah.
That's how they all do it.
Oh my word.
Oh no. There seems to be a theme for breaking stuff in weddings around the world. There's the breaking of the glass at Jewish weddings, Ben, which of course is meant to commemorate
the destruction of the temple.
Great,
the
good.
Destruction of both temples.
Great. The internet agrees with you, apparently, so it'll save us getting a subtweet from some of our Jewish listeners who like to pick Ben up on his Judaism every now and again. In Germany, wedding guests tend to throw porcelain dishes on the ground to ward off evil spirits. And then apparently the couple have to clean it up to demonstrate their capacity to work together. There's no, I'll clean that up if you do the laundry at these weddings. It's just both of them down. Guatemala, groom's mothers will typically break a white ceramic bell full of grain in order to bring prosperity. And in Spain, groomsmen often cut the groom's tie up into little pieces. Sometimes they'd even auction off the pieces to guests for good luck.
What, so they have to do like an office prank?
Yeah, very much so. I read about a very classy wedding, but one that seemed to be a bit of a nightmare. The wedding of Grace Kelly and Prince Rainier of Monaco on April the 19th, 1956. Grace Kelly met Prince Rainier while attending the Cannes Film Festival in 1955, and they got married after a year-long romance. And they were married at Monaco's St. Nicholas Cathedral, which was full of lilacs and lilies of the valley. Grace Kelly's wedding dress is an iconic high-necked, long-sleeved dress, 10.5-foot-long train, designed by Helen Rose, who designed Elizabeth Taylor's first wedding gown. That's, you want to get in with Liz Taylor for designing wedding dresses, don't you?
Yes.
That's the gift that keeps on giving. It was made from 125-year-old lace from Brussels and taffeta and had thousands of hand-sewn pearls. Prince Rainier, apparently, in a Monegasque tradition, he entered after the bride and he wore a military uniform that he had designed himself.
Oh, I'd love to have got married in a military uniform I designed myself.
Right. They had 700 wedding guests, and you had, like, Cary Grant was there, Gloria Swanson, Ava Gardner, Aristotle Onassis, Conrad Hilton, like, everybody who's anybody who's famous in the 50s is there. And then the wedding cake had six tiers to it, which was a gift from the pastry chefs at Monte Carlo's Hotel de Paris. A pair of live turtle doves flew out from the cake when the prince cut into it with his military sword.
I just don't get live birds in food because I don't want to eat that cake that definitely has turtle dove shit in it.
You don't want to eat the lower tiers of it that they've definitely shat on.
Yeah.
You want the middle to higher tiers.
I mean, do I? I just feel like essence of guano is going to make its way up through the cake. I'm going to go for a no birds in cake rule.
Seems fair. And the people of Monaco gave the married couple a Rolls Royce convertible as a wedding gift. And Aristotle Onassis gave them a 147-foot yacht, which they spent their honeymoon on. All sounds nice.
That really does put the knockoff Le Creuset set that is my go-to gift into perspective, doesn't it?
Yeah. Or £25 towards your honeymoon.
Yeah.
The thing I love about this is when Grace Kelly got engaged to Prince Rainier, she was contracted to MGM Studios. Yeah, and she still had 3 years left on her contract.
Yeah.
And so she was like, well, I want to go and be a Mediterranean princess. Let me go and get married. And the studio said, yeah, sure, that's fine. We'll release you from your contract. We'll help pay for the wedding dress as a gift. But you guys have to give us the right to film your wedding ceremony for a documentary and a live televised broadcast. Wow. So they had their dream royal wedding, but it was basically all being choreographed by MGM Studios. They were being pulled here and there by everyone. Grace referred to it as the carnival of the century. And loads of people like tried to piggyback on the back of it. Makeup brand Max Factor claimed it was providing the cosmetics for the day. It was complete bollocks. But all of these like different commercial interests started saying, oh, we're really involved in the royal wedding.
This was a royal wedding that had product placement in it.
Yeah, oh, 100%. You've organised a wedding. I've organised a wedding. You want things to go perfectly. And then you've got MGM producers and people go, actually, can you stand 3 feet to the left because it'll catch the light better? Things like that.
Okay, I'm just going to ask you this now, lads. But if you were to pick one Hollywood director to direct your funeral, who would you choose?
That's interesting. I'd choose Tarantino because the funeral would start now. And then there'd be a scene of me fucking my wife, but like I'm dead. And then there'd be a scene for some reason. Samuel Jackson's involved. He's dead too.
Of course.
I mean, he's been dead for 55 years. I'm 24. And then there'd be something to do with John Travolta reigniting his career. And then it would show me in my casket. And oh, the mystery was he was a serial killer all along. And this isn't his funeral. This is the memorial for everyone he's killed.
I think a Tarantino wedding, they would cut into like one of these cakes that has birds inside it. And it would be a full blood splash across the screen. Like he's actually slashed the birds in the thing. I'd obviously go for Anthony Minghella. Nice sort of like Vaseline on the lens, soft focus, very romantic, English patient style-y. Ben?
Well, I'm torn. Part of me wants to have Alfred Hitchcock, just so there's a nice little silhouette outline of him. But I think we all know that the best wedding would be directed by Taika Waititi.
100%.
100%. It's like the bride comes down the aisle riding Cerberus while Led Zeppelin's Immigrant Song plays at ear-splitting volume. That's what we
want. Yeah. I'm going to go for my world's worst wedding, though. And it's not the fairy tale wedding of Prince Rainier and Grace Kelly, which Prince Rainier described it as the biggest circus in history, by the way, with just the number of reporters and film crew and everything. He said, "We both agreed we should really have gotten married in a little chapel in the mountains," which, for a prince, is a big statement. But yeah, I've gone for the wedding between Glyn Wolfe and Linda Taylor. And we've mentioned Glyn and Linda on the podcast before. Glyn, also known as Scotty Wolfe, was born in 1908. He died in 1997. He was a Baptist minister who lived in California. And he held the world record for the largest number of monogamous marriages. 31 marriages. His shortest one lasted 19 days. His longest lasted 11 years. Three of his marriages were to women he had previously divorced. Only five of them ended with the death of his spouse, in case you're wondering, is it sort of a black widower thing? And his last marriage was to this woman, Linda Taylor. And Linda Taylor holds the record for being the most married woman in history.
Oh my God, so it's like when a member of the DC universe ends up in a Marvel comic. This is
yeah, or if like, you know, in boxing where they unify the titles.
Yes, yes, that's what it is. That's what it is.
He was married 31 times. She was married 23 times, and the reason I think it's the world's worst wedding is it was exactly what you think it was. It was a publicity stunt.
Oh, no.
A week after the wedding, yeah, Linda went back to her hometown in Indiana, but kept her married name. Her first marriage was at the age of 16, apparently for love, and her last, as I said, in 1996, was for publicity. She'd been married to a convict, a homeless man, a musician, a plumber. One husband lasted just 3 days, and she married another man 3 times. Glyn Wolfe died in about 45 days before his 89th birthday, with approximately 40 children. And his body went unclaimed. None of the 29 women he had married, and only one of his 40 children, attended his funeral service.
Good Lord.
Yeah, so I just think it's quite a sad image of these two people who been married loads of times for, you know, I don't think all of them could have been for love. And certainly that last one wasn't. And, you know, a week after the wedding, Linda went back home and left him, and he died sad and alone as well.
That is pretty sad. I'll just pick you up on one thing there. You said that their wedding was essentially a publicity stunt. Aren't all weddings at their heart essentially just a publicity stunt?
Yeah, it's just for the likes.
Here's the thing. My problem is that I hate all the television that's on. And so I've watched House of Cards like 5 times. I've watched Breaking Bad like 4 times. I'm rewatching Game of Thrones for the 6th time right now. The Red Wedding is actually not the worst wedding. The worst wedding in Game of Thrones is the, do you remember the Dothraki wedding between Daenerys and Khal Drogo in the first?
Yeah.
That was terrible because there's one scene in it where they're watching the Dothraki rituals and then a woman gets on all fours and then a Dothraki starts fucking her from behind. She's not screaming for her life. She's not punching him off her. This is consensual sex. These two people know each other. And then another man punches that man in the face while she's fucking her. And then those two men have a fight to the bloody death. A bloody fight to the death. And then the man who punched the man rips the man's throat. Man bleeds on the floor. And he takes the man's braid as a symbol of victory. And then the woman, after watching her boyfriend or husband get murdered, starts fucking this other guy. And they just start fucking. And then Khal Drogo smiles like a half smile as if to say, good. And then the scene just that's the whole scene is a murder, and then they just go back to have this is the horniest woman. This is my ideal wife. She will fucking just watch you die. And then, I don't know, I guess I'm still kind of wet. Let's keep fucking.
It's, wow. It was,
I mean, the beautiful thing structurally and stylistically about Game of Thrones is the way that George R. R. Martin managed to pick different bits of culture and seeded throughout the world. So there's bits of Venetian culture and Persian culture. And it's just lovely with this that he's managed to pick up on a traditional Scunthorpe wedding.
It's very different to a conga line or people dancing the Macarena or something, isn't it?
How funny would it be?
And like, it seems like nobody raises an eyebrow at this Dothraki wedding. So, yeah, it's tradition. It's just tradition.
How funny would it be if right after that they did a cha-cha slide? two step, and it's just moving the guy's dead body like Weekend at Bernie's.
One hop this time. The weddings, basically all of the stuff around sexual politics and weddings and stuff in Game of Thrones is really grim. And yeah, but the Red Wedding really captures people because it's sort of a little bit out of the blue and a beloved character dies in the middle.
A little bit out of the blue. Think,
Red Wedding out of the blue, yeah.
Well, that was a bit random. That was...
Yeah, how odd. This show was really peaceful up to now. No, but because you've not really had time to, if you'll pardon the choice of words, bed in with the characters, because this Dothraki wedding happens really early on in the first series, it's people are just like, oh, okay, this is the tone of the show, isn't it?
But worst real-life wedding, I would have to say, apart from most likely the wedding between my mother and father where I was conceived, because, ew, you know.
You conceived as part of the wedding ceremony?
I assume it. I just, the timings of the year and the wedding and my date of birth, it all adds up. But, wow. Yeah.
You should price that into the wedding gifts. They should have gone, listen, tonight we're planning on getting pregnant. So as part of the wedding gift list, we're also going to have neonatal care.
As well.
So hang on, I'm trying to work out, because obviously a shotgun wedding is a wedding where the bride is already pregnant. So what would you call a wedding where the child is conceived on the wedding night?
A bazooka wedding.
Bazooka wedding. Very nice.
Because no one's firing blanks. Hey, oh, all right. Well reviewed, Ted Bundy.
So you were like 8.5, 9 months after the wedding you were born.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Maybe they could have fucked the week after. I don't know. Don't remember when I came out of my dad's cock, but I assume it was around about that. Which is a weird thing. Have you ever noticed how weird that is? People always say, I came out of my dad's cock. But they never say, they only say you come out of your mum's vagina when you're born. But you did come out. You didn't come out of your dad's cock. You were more in your mum's vagina than your dad's balls.
Yeah, people should get used to saying that to their parents.
Well, because a girl is born with all the eggs she'll ever have for an entire life. So, the cum is, let's just say, generated on the fly. So,
that is one of the worst sentences you could say.
It's like Amazon. It's delivered. It's like Amazon Fresh.
Typically, like the men, the woman has been prepared while the man is just last minute going, shit, flowers from the service station, quick.
So it is bizarre to me that they say you come out of your dad's balls, because you don't. You come out of your mother's pussy.
I've never had either of those sentences said to me, thankfully, by my parents.
Is that not how the birds and the bees happened? Did your parents sit you down?
Irish Catholic, mate. Immaculate Conception as far as they're concerned.
Well, it was very much, I saw the tape, and let me tell you, it was immaculate.
So what's your worst real-life wedding apart from that one?
Worst real-life wedding, apart from the ones where I knew the guy had cheated on his wife.
No, for real?
Oh yeah, of course. I'm only friends with animals, bro. Real dogs. No, but no, it's, you know, it's just family business, and you know, the guy's fucked around, and it's an open for closed secret, and it's all hush hush. But the woman stayed because she's 35 and she wants a baby. It's time.
The flat that I lived in when I was at university, the guy whose room I had before me, he regularly cheated on the woman who went on to become his wife. And my flatmate at the time just has memories of him coming in, just kind of going, oh, hi, nice to see you, pal. Listen, whatever you do, don't tell Emma about this one. Night-night.
Wow.
And, yeah. But, you know, my flatmate wasn't invited to the wedding like you were, Tad, and so couldn't do the classic intervention. I mean, Tad, there was the moment in the wedding when, does anyone here know of any lawful reason why these two people cannot be joined in holy matrimony? And you did. And you stayed silent.
I fucking hate every wedding I've been to has been horrible. It's the whole day. I don't care about your relationship. I don't care about your love. I just don't like fucking weddings. It's all day. Every time, both of you are looking at me with disappointment. Am I an anomaly in this? I have a cousin's wedding that I've been invited to, and I'm trying to find a way to just not go.
They are tricky because it's basically people spend so long focusing on the getting married part of it and making it a perfect day for you and your partner, which, you know, makes sense. It's your special day. You're dropping a ton of money on it, but equally, people forget the. It's going to be a big old party part of it. The hardest bit is you turn up, you maybe have a drink, people get married, there are photos, and there can be a long, long gap between turning up and getting any sustenance. And you've got to make sure that there is good, solid food happening regularly. And then the other bit people mess up is the bit after the meal with the band. That's the bit where it goes from, yeah, you've got married, we're all very happy for you, let's have a proper party now, please.
Do you know what I think I'm realising?
Yeah.
I just haven't been to a wedding where there's anyone who I love there. I think that's the that's the problem. Oh. I've not been to a wedding where, like, I give a shit that it's happening. So maybe when I do go to a wedding, well, I saw Travis and Jessica become, and they flower, and the love. Maybe I'll enjoy it then. But for now, every wedding has been objectively a complete and utter waste of time. And then the divorce rate is 50%. It's so dumb. Why is anyone getting fucking married?
For the tax benefits, mate.
Tax benefits, but you spent 10 grand on the fucking ceremony.
Yeah, that is true.
It's dumb.
I think your enjoyment of a wedding is directly proportional to how close to the top table you're seated.
Yeah.
If you're at the top table, obviously it's your wedding or it's a family member's, and generally it's like you actually are invested in it. Like you say, someone you love is there.
Yeah.
If you're like three sort of rings of tables back from that, you're probably a plus one and you don't really know both the people getting married at all, and all the in jokes in the groom's and the best man's speeches are completely over your head.
Don't get me wrong. I've been to family weddings. Just no one I love has been there. Many, many family weddings. I give a shit about these people. Give a shit about them. Man.
Have you given consideration to what your wedding day would look like?
So much.
If you got married,
I don't want more than 50 people there. I don't want to marry a woman who wants more than 50 people there. I was thinking in the shower earlier. A lot of thoughts happen in my showers. They're very long because I'm very lonely and I live in a basement studio. Anyway, yeah, dude. There's probably going to be like four comedians there at my wedding. No, probably no more than four. I don't think more than four comedians like me.
Oh, well, I'm looking forward to my invitation.
I know all the comedians. I know all of them. No one hits me up for a coffee. Hey, Tad, we should hang out. I gig 300 times a year. I know every comedian and no one hangs out. So there's going to be none there. Four close friends. I have to invite cousins, but I don't fucking like... That's not I don't like them. It's just I don't want to have that text. You know that cousin text four times a year? What's happened in the last quarter? Oh, my wife died and my dog had AIDS. It's like, oh, cool. I'll see you in January. I don't give a shit about these people's lives. I don't give a shit about these people. So I got to keep up with them four times a year so that one day in my life, let's be honest, I'm going to have a divorce. 2 days in my life, they are invited to a thing that cost me 10 grand. That's so fucking stupid. But I have to, because otherwise... It's going to be like my wife is going to have 39, 40 people and I'm going to have like 7. I can't think of more than 10 people that I would want at my wedding.
Don't stretch yourself. There's nothing, I agree with you, there's nothing worse than an unwanted cousin at a wedding. Like you, like you're here because of a fluke of genetics. In terms of how close you are to me genetically, cousin, I may as well have a banana here because I share 40% of DNA with that. Yeah. I would rather have a banana, a mushroom, a pufferfish, and an orangutan rather than you here in terms of how I feel about them. I'd like that I agree with them rather than friends. And do you know what? Streamlining your wedding, Tad, there is nothing wrong with only having 10 people at the wedding that you don't know that you're necessarily going to have yet.
Yeah.
I would like to be present at a wedding where it is top heavy on the bride to groom side, where she's got 40, you've got 10. I want to really bathe in how awkward it is for your guests.
Because we've talked, I think we've mentioned on the podcast before, Dunbar's number, which is the idea that you can only have a certain number of close friends. So 150 relations. But actually, there's other circles within it as well. 5 people, apparently, is the loved ones.
Yeah.
Then 15 is the good friends.
Yeah.
And then 50 is friends. So I'm imagining you're, like you say, 10 is about right for your sort of loved ones and friends-ish.
Yeah, I'm around about there. I'd say I have about, you know, in terms of friends, I've got about 7 or 8 people where I care whether or not they live or die. And then I've got, I've got like, you know, about 15 that entertain me.
Tad at the Red Wedding is watching arrows go into people going, nah.
I like that your response to Dunmore's number of 150 possible close contacts and narrowing it down to 7 you care about and 7 who entertain you is the way I look at the TV guide when I turn it on. Like, God, 150 channels, but let's face it, there's only 7 channels that I care whether they get decommissioned or not, and another 7 that entertain me if there's nothing else on.
Yeah, Dave is a sometimes food. Very good.
So we should... Let's narrow this down to the specifics. So we've got your possibilities for the worst wedding are the Red Wedding, your parents' wedding, or your wedding when it eventually happens.
To be honest, I'm going to streamline it down so it's not even a bride. This is going to be me. It's going to be me. I'm going to be my own best man, my own groom. I'm going to be my mum, my father that's abandoned me. That would be hilarious, would be to invite my father to my wedding. He flies here from Zimbabwe after, like, I don't know, probably like 33 years of never communicating, and I just don't let him in. That would be so fucking funny.
Well, do you know what? I hear that as a celebrant, Priti Patel is very affordable.
Oh my God.
To begin with, I'm sure you lads have heard the phrase a shotgun wedding. I might have even mentioned it earlier, which is the bride is pregnant and it is a marriage of convenience. Of course, the phrase comes from the really unpleasant image of the father of the bride-to-be appearing with a shotgun to ensure that the groom follows through with the wedding, which I think is the nice version of it, rather than he's going to appear with a shotgun to take out the groom. I looked out what equivalent phrases are in different cultures. So in some states in the Arabian Gulf, it is known as a zawaj mukfia, and the closest translation of that is a police station marriage. which I guess, like, I'm going to march you to the station and make you get married in front of the commissioner. I quite enjoy the phrase for it in Japan. In the 1990s, it was known as Deki Chata Kekon, and that can be literally translated as an oops, we did it marriage.
Well, I didn't realise Brittany was so into Japanese culture.
Very nice. In China, you have the Fengji Chenggun marriage, which literally means married by order of the child. It is apparently a pun on the word Fengji Chenggun wedding, which literally means married by imperial edict.
Wow,
so fun.
That's, I mean, I think that is a kind of you had to be there kind of joke.
But also that then implies that there are 2 people who can order weddings, emperors and babies.
Oh God, imagine if there is an infant emperor on the throne. The havoc they could cause.
You two, married, now!
In Korea, there is the slang term for a shotgun wedding, sok dawi ban, which literally translates as speeding over the limit. Last of all, in Vietnam, you have bak si bao kui, which literally means because the doctor said so. I had a very brief look at nude weddings. Have a guess, gentlemen, where the first publicised nude wedding took place.
San Francisco?
Oh, you were in the right country, but the wrong city. It was in the year 1934. Tad, any thoughts?
New York.
Oh, you've gone from coast to coast. No, it was in Chicago at the 1934 World's Fair.
Sorry, what?
Right? There's something wonderful about that, isn't it? That a display of capitalism and scientific progress, there were two people getting married in their birthday suits.
Did anyone volunteer to hold the bride's train for her? Where did they put the rings?
Oh, good Lord.
There's so many questions to be answered here.
There were. There really were. And I think we may have talked about this World's Fair before, because quite famously, running up to it, there was a massive dysentery outbreak in the city, which is the last thing you want in a nude wedding.
That makes more sense then. That's what makes more sense for a nude wedding, actually, because you don't want a clothed wedding and wearing white with dysentery.
Yes, of course. Oh, so it was a naked wedding by
pragmatism.
Of convenience, yes. Looked up something that was an event that happened a lot in the deep south of America in the 19th century.
Oh, God. We're talking about weddings in the deep south in the 19th century.
Oh, yeah. No, it's not going to be too bleak. No, this wasn't real weddings. This was pretend weddings, and they were called womanless weddings. And from what I've read about them, you know how in various cultures around the world, you would have the day when the jester would be king for the day, a sort of an inversion of norms.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Folks... before gay marriage was legal, the notion of a womanless wedding was considered hilarious. And so this was a comic ritual with an all-male cast where the men would dress up as bridesmaids and the bride and flower girls and the mother of the bride, and they would act out this sort of, at the times considered, farcical non-wedding. And some of the stagings would also contain impersonations of notable people. So as well as it being an all-male cast there, some people would be dressed as people like Henry Ford and Charlie Chaplin. So it continued into the 20th century as well. And
I've just seen a photo of one of them. They look like a really bad version of a Sgt. Pepper's album cover.
Yes, they absolutely do. Combined with like the Addams Family.
Yeah.
Often these weddings would be carried out to raise money for local charities, and the men would ham it up, kissing audience members of both genders, flashing their garter belts, and adjusting their fake breasts. And it has this real sort of burlesque feel with a weird medieval carnival feel, but it was apparently quite popular in states like North Carolina and across many parts of the Deep South. It's really very odd indeed.
There's a bit of me is like, great, people were doing drag back then. And then there's a bit of me is like, oh, I bet they weren't doing it really respectfully, though.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to know. I try to look into it to see whether any of them were same-sex couples going, this is our chance, guys. Yeah. But I'm not convinced. It seems mostly to have been a burlesque of them.
We talked about matelotage on the podcast before as well.
Yes, we did.
Some pirates of the same sex would marry one another to basically ensure that... if one of them died, the other would get their booty, so to speak.
In South Korea, following their wedding ceremonies, some South Korean grooms are subjected to a ritual before they can leave with their new wives, and that is the beating of their feet. So his groomsmen or family members will remove his shoes, bind his ankles with rope, and take turns to beat his feet with either a stick or dried fish. Now,
is that to strengthen his feet for walking to the shops?
Well, it's meant to be a test of his character. I think it's basically to cripple him so he can't run away.
How is that a test of your character? Like, well, he won't stand up for himself while we beat him with fish on his fucking feet. That's
it feels a bit like maybe they're sort of trying to make sure he has to be in bed on his wedding night.
Yeah.
If he's not able to walk,
yeah.
it means they have to be like forced to be in bed and do their conjugal duty, so to speak.
For my choice, I looked at my own people's traditions. Firstly, before I went in, I found, something we kind of sort of had at my wedding, but not in the terms that I found it. So there was a Yiddish tradition in the 19th century to have a badchen then, which was basically a traditional wedding entertainer, poet, and master of ceremonies. In fact, it dates back to at least the 17th century. The badchen's job was to guide the bride and groom through the various stages of their ceremony, sing to the bride, the groom, the extended family, and accompany the klezmer musicians. He also turned up on Hanukkah and on Purim as a sort of minstrel of the festival, and also, slightly worryingly, also turned up at ceremonial circumcisions, where, I'll be honest, I think I think the last thing you need there is Robin Williams doing a bit.
Yeah.
the way he would act is he would focus an awful lot on the bride as she came in, and there would be the seating of the bride, singing from the bride, the bridal veiling, and the badchan would sing couplets punctuated with accompaniment from musicians. And often these couplets would include description of a wife's responsibilities combined with phrases such as kalenyu, kalenyu, vain, vain, vain. Oh, dear little bride, weep, weep, weep.
Uh-oh.
So we're back in China, aren't we?
Yeah, it's back in the crying before the wedding day thing, yeah.
And I thought that was the weirdest thing I could find in Yiddish culture. Before, my friends, I found the Schwarze Kazena and the Magefa Kazena, the black wedding or the plague wedding. And this is a wedding that was took place in times of crisis, for example, epidemics, in order to ward off diseases. And often what would happen would that the bride and groom would be two members of the community, often outcasts from it, orphans, the homeless, or the physically or mentally disabled, who would have no reasonable chance of getting married by themselves. And so the members of the community would sponsor them, often rich members of the community, in order to have a wedding, and hope that this wedding would ward off the bad spirits that were causing the plague. And how would you make sure that the bad spirits would be warded off? Well, this wedding would take place under a black chuppah, a black canopy, rather than the traditional white one, in a cemetery.
What?
Ooh, so, that's creepy as fuck.
It really is creepy as fuck.
And when you say people would sponsor these people to get married...
Yes.
Are these people who wanted to get married to each other, or is it slightly forced wedding vibes as well?
It's quite forced wedding vibes. There is a bit of a human sacrifice, but without the sacrifice element to it. It was sort of a placeholder for actual violence. So there was a...
it's a placeholder for violence, explains so much of human culture and tradition.
It really does. So in 1866, there was a cholera epidemic in Eastern Europe, and the Hasidic community, in a similar way to Republicans blaming hurricanes on LGBTQ weddings, the Hasidic community there declared that women wearing crinolines and earrings were to blame for the epidemic. And so... many of them were Jesus attacked. Christ. They had their crinolines ripped off, their earrings ripped off. They were beaten publicly. And in fact, in one story, a rabbi and shochet, or ritual slaughterer in the abattoir, took it upon themselves to murder people who were accused of adultery. And so the plague wedding sort of took the place of this to try and cure the community of this disease. The very first account of them was actually from 1831. There's more accounts of them in 1849. And again, in a cholera outbreak in 1892. And this one that I read about in Lublin, which I think Lublin's in Poland, but at the time it was part of the Russian Empire. As part of the wedding, four young women were harnessed to a plough and made to plough around the town limits in a ceremony to attempt to sort of head off the plague at the pass, as it would.
Was there a lack of oxen in the town at the time?
Clearly. Well, when I told my wife about this, she was like, oh, that's what I should have got my bridesmaids to do. What are you looking for? What are you looking for in a bridesmaid? Warmth, honesty, diligence? No, strong shoulders. Yeah. There have been plague weddings to try and cut off the Spanish flu in 1918. One of the most celebrated black weddings was between Harry Rosenberg and Fanny Jacobs in October 1918 at Cobbs Creek Cemetery in Philadelphia, where over 1,000 people attended.
Living or dead?
1,000 living, 5,000 dead. But apparently it didn't stop Harry or Fanny from succumbing to the flu.
Oh no.
There is another one, also in 1918 in Canada, Harry Fleckman and Dora Wiseman, where, oh my word, at one end of Sha'are Sedek Cemetery in the city's north end, they had a black wedding ceremony that drew more than 1,000 Jewish and Gentile guests. Whilst at the other end of the cemetery, there were 10 Jewish men conducting a funeral of a victim of the Spanish flu.
Oh no.
Super bleak, right?
That's like when a hotel has two function rooms and it books like a wedding in one, and then it's like the funeral director's award of the year or something in the other one.
Right. And there is even a story in the Times of Israel from, I think it's 2020, but it could be 2021, of a COVID plague wedding being
I was literally going to ask, has someone done one?
Yes, they have.
That was the marriage between Mr. Astra and Mrs. Zeneca.
I mean, you'd think it would be the Pfizers, because that sounds like the nice Jewish name, doesn't it?
Pfizer is much more Jewish as a name.
So, our nominees...
We had to take a jab at it. Sorry.
Yeah. Did they book the vaccines as the wedding band?
All of this is getting cut.
I'm editing this episode. It's all staying in.
Our nominees, gentlemen, for the world's worst wedding are Barry's of the unification bout between Glyn Wolfe and Linda Taylor, who got married a combined time of 54 times. Tad's nomination of his own wedding in the future, which sounds like an emotional clusterfuck from every angle going. Or my nominee of a traditional Yiddish plague wedding. Now listen, anthropologically, Glyn and Linda's wedding sounds bleak and emotionally empty. Personally, Tad, yours sounds bleak and emotionally empty. But I was so horrified by the notion of a plague wedding and the fact that it's been so codified into the culture, and that clearly they were able to rustle up a black canopy, and on the one side, 1,000 people coming along. But before the 1920s, when there's no telly and barely any radio, I guess it's easy enough to rustle a crowd of 1,000 people to anything. Going, what's happening? Oh, we're marrying a leopard to a homeless person. Yeah, all right, I'll turn up. There's nothing else to do. But there's something uniquely unpleasant about it that I'm going to choose my own Yiddish plague wedding.
Seems fair.
For our good news this week, we go to Widnes, where we are going to celebrate the remarkable feat of Paul Ellis. Paul has a broken spine and was paralysed for 6 months after a fall in 1992. He lived in pain for years, and eventually in 2008, he underwent surgery to have both legs amputated below the knee. That has not stopped him becoming a remarkable fundraiser. And next week, he is going to climb the United Kingdom's highest peak for the third time, which is just
wow,
remarkable. The picture of him, he's wearing... They sort of look like knee protectors that you'd wear if you were going skateboarding, but they've got tread on the bottom. And he is already raised £28,000.
Did you say he was divorced?
Yes.
He sounds very divorced. No married man would be allowed to take this much time away from his actual life to do this kind of... Only a divorcee and Jimmy Savile are the two people who could do some shit like this.
I can't believe, Tad, that I'm telling you about the remarkable feats of a heavily disabled man raising money for charity, and all you can do is go, big Elon Musk energy. Big Musk energy there. I've uplifted you, listeners, with this tremendous news. I've uplifted Tad because he gets a chance to punch down once again. Yeah. Before we go, Tad, where can our listeners find you and what they find you doing when they get there?
In June, your listeners, I'll be doing a work in progress show for Always Be Comedy online, however, because I'm not famous enough to get booked to do it live. So they can also find me doing a work in progress show at the Museum of Comedy on the 21st of June. The Always Be Comedy gig will be on the 14th of June. If they don't want to do either of those things, they can find me doing another work in progress at the Museum of Comedy on the 23rd of July.
And again, and you're on Instagram and stuff as well. And you,
I'm on Instagram. Follow me on Instagram, please. Follow me on Instagram. I'm on Instagram. Follow me on Instagram. And this is where you put the music to play out. Follow me on Instagram. Follow me on Instagram.
Oh no, Tad is glitching. Okay. We are all off to organise a mass Mooney wedding of Make-A-Wish kids to each other in an attempt to ward off the next wave of COVID. Until next time, my friends, goodbye.
We're all off to follow Tad on Instagram. Go follow Tad on Instagram.
Yes.
Should we follow Tad on Instagram? Let's follow Tad on
Instagram. Yeah, I'm going to go follow Tad on Instagram. What a great idea. Yeah.
Where would you have ever thought of that?